right. Welcome back. Episode 114.
Yep.
Lisa's here with me. We've got John back.
Yeah, it's good to be back.
So we're gonna do a little bit of repeating. I know we've talked about this pretty heavily the last probably month and a half. But I just thought there was some interesting stuff out there right now, chart wise, and some earnings reports that I wanted to go back to the semiconductor discussion. Mm-hmm. So we are going to do two truths and a lie about semiconductors. So semiconductors conduct electricity better than insulators, but worse than metals. That in-between behavior is what makes them useful for controlling electrical signals. Almost every modern electrical device, phones, cars, appliances, computers, relies on semiconductor chips to function. The United States is currently the world's largest producer of semiconductor chips, manufacturing more than any other country. Start with John.
All right. I'm going to go with C on this one for the lie. I'm pretty confident in B. A is about 50-50, but I think C should be, I would say United States would probably be number two behind Taiwan, would be my guess.
All right. Lisa?
I'm with John on this. I'm pretty set on B. That's true. Like nearly everything that we use every day has some form of a chip in it, a higher or lower end than A. Same as John, it's a 50-50 chance. I don't know exactly how they conduct electricity, if better or worse, or if that's really the thing that we are looking for that makes them so special. But I think C, I think Taiwan is the largest producer of chips. And then I think the US might come second or third in line there. So I think C.
You guys are correct.
Okay. So is it Taiwan first?
I believe so, yeah.
And US is second, or?
I don't know if second or third.
Okay.
Yeah. So we're going to go, the theme of this discussion is changing of the tide. So Lisa, you had found an interesting chart, and I've seen it a couple of different places online, but it's showing the free cash flow expectation of the next 12-month free cash flow of the hyperscalers versus the select few semiconductors, and not even all the semiconductors that we hear about. And it was a pretty significant shift over the last two and a half years. So hyperscalers, which is Amazon, Google, Meta, Microsoft, and the chart included Oracle. I don't really include them necessarily in hyperscalers, but those companies have literally led the market for the last 2.5, even maybe going back 3 years. And these were the companies that everybody wanted to be into. They were the largest positions in everybody's portfolios, and some of them still are, but they've been performing horribly. But these are the companies that are creating the large language models. They're the ones putting the CapEx to work in data centers and building this AI thing out. Semiconductors, on the other hand, it's always been a hate-love relationship with semis, depending on the industry as well. But generally speaking, semis are known for their cyclicality. They don't know demand very well, and so they overbuild, oversaturate the market, they lose pricing power, and it just, that cycle continues. But now, semiconductors are loved and hyperscalers are out of style. So going back to the chart, it's pretty significant. So I'll get to a couple of questions here, but I just want to touch on a few stats. So NVIDIA, Micron, Broadcom, and Applied Materials, free cash flow over the next 12 months is expected to be $450 billion. 2022 is around $50 billion. That's about 70% growth per year for the last 4 years. Hyperscalers have gone from around $250 billion in free cash flow expectations 2 years ago, or in 2022.
Or I think 2024 was also 260.
Yeah. And now, right now, it's expected to be negative $25 billion. So this is a big change. Do you think the CapEx of the hyperscaler starts, or sorry, the free cash flow of the hyperscalers starts to turn around at some point after all of this investment is, I don't know when it's done, but maybe it's never done at this point. But does it, do we see an inflection point here soon?
Yeah. So I think, I mean, this year is projected to be 700 billion spent total, and we get a little bit more news on that during earnings season, if they're on pace or if they're raising or whatever they're doing. But I think it's like until 2030 is like next year, it should, I think, breach the $1 trillion mark and then even more after that. So there is no slowing down just yet. Interesting enough, how investors will taking that, right? Because we see that already the expectations are sky high about growth in tech names, also still in hyperscalers, they're still driving the boat. Mm-hmm. And in investors, I mean, we see it with the valuations and with how are they doing year to date. And there's like a new moniker here with, instead of Mag 7, it's the Laggard 7 or the Lag 7. It just takes them more to being able to create excitement. And there's not a whole lot necessary for the stock to sell off and for investors to get really jittery. They do not even have to miss or guide anything weird. It's just not good enough. So it gets even harder for them to entice excitement. While there is a shift happening overall. And I think we see that in the market. I mean, while the hyperscalers, most of the seven are lagging the market year to date, but the market is up. So it's like there's the broadening happening through the picks and shovels, mostly now semi, where most of the spend is going. I think to the point of will that shift? I think yes, at some point it will go back, and I think it can go back quickly to the hyperscalers. I mean, once that everything is built out, not everything is built out, but the infrastructure is kind of where we where they really can start monetizing it. Well, we do not need as many chips anymore, right? It's all built, it's all on the ground. So I think then when it really gets to monetizing it, the leadership can shift back very quickly. Mm-hmm. I don't know when this will happen, but I also think even though the leadership will finally shift back, which I think will happen, it does not mean that semis again go back into the hate love relationship of cyclicality and stuff. Yes, overall, but still there's new chips coming out. There's new developments. The data centers have to be, you know, maintained. They have to be, you know, chip switched out and all of that. So it's not that they're completely, you know, going back into the dark, you know, times anymore. So I think there will be still, it can provide a cushion for the chip manufacturers too, that can maybe put a little bit of dampen on the usual blow when they're out of favor or kind of in oversupply. But I think leadership will finally move back. And I think why they're also out of favor, and you touched on that the free cash flow and the chart is crazy. It like really switches. And hyperscalers are going to negative free cash flow. And a couple of years back, when you think back, what was so enticing about these hyperscalers, even before the whole AI frenzy started, was, hey, they are capital light. They have cash for ages. They are just cash flow generating machines. And then with the AI, like everything was fine. They are buying back their stocks. They were like everybody's darling. And now they're not only not buying back their stock anymore, but they're issuing stock, and also not only on the stock side, but also on the fixed income side, issuing bonds and all of that. And kind of doing some weird financial engineering of how to keep that on the balance sheet, of how to keep that nicely looking, but they need a lot of cash, and their free cash flow pile, as the chart shows, is kind of dragged down, right? And the complete picture of what the investment thesis was about these companies has completely shifted. So there's just another way you have to look at them now, I guess, that investors have to get used to.
So John, back in 2022-ish, people fell out of love with Meta because they were spending so much money on this metaverse thing. Do you think these hyperscalers, at some point, investors start saying, I used to buy you because you had so much free cash flow, and now you're going negative to spend it on AI and no longer buying back debt, or you're no longer buying back stock, you're issuing debt. I'm going to start pushing your stock even further down because I no longer want to invest in your negative free cash flow company, even if there might be a return on investment in the next 3 years. Mm-hmm. I don't want to wait around for it. Mm-hmm. Do you think it's going to be that kind of scenario?
I think it could be, but I think they have a much longer leash because like when I first heard about Metaverse, I thought it was a ridiculous idea. I was still in college. I was like, why would they do something like this? And there was never any like proof of concept with the Metaverse, but with AI, we have models and we can see it's useful and people are adopting it. So I think they have a lot longer runway to go before they get to that point. But it obviously could get to that point if we see them not being able to monetize 2, 3, 4 years down the line. And then I think that's when you kind of start to see the change in the investor behavior. Because even though they've been lagging the rest of the market, they still haven't, there hasn't been like a collapse or anything. They've just kind of been stagnant to slightly negative.
So asking both of you this question, how long do you think investors give the hyperscalers before they start doing that and saying, okay, I'm out?
I think it also has to do with the competitive landscape that is still, I believe, a little bit underappreciated, how far China is along, because they're catching up pretty quickly. And I think it's still like after we heard about DeepSeek and all of that, and now we know, okay, they're actually not as far off, but we still don't. I think it's still not priced in of what it would mean if China really catches up. And then it's like, okay, the whole story changes, right? Mm-hmm. Of how much they put to the ground in CapEx spend without actually seeing something and then China catching up to that. And actually when it comes to tokens, China is, I think it's the second month in a row where China led the US when it comes in tokens used. So I believe it's still an underappreciated risk at this point, and that could change the trajectory of how investors are seeing of how much time they give them until they figure it out.
Yeah. So what we've been talking about hyperscalers, what other industries are benefiting from these hyperscalers CapEx?
A lot of the data centers and interconnectivity are benefiting. They're obviously kind of in that same semiconductor group. I think down the line, a lot of consumer discretionary could be beneficial. Healthcare, many companies could see different improvements from AI to expand margins and kind of grow in different ways. So I think that the use cases for where AI could end up are very wide and could reach almost every sector.
Okay. Lisa?
I think when we stick with just who benefits from the build out right now, then I would say, I mean, semiconductors, obviously the majority of the spend goes to them. I mean, we see like 430 billion goes to the semi area directly. But there's also some more boring parts. Like what do we need to build these data centers? We need cement, like a CRH, for example, right? We need all these small bits and pieces that connect the data centers and make them work. We need cooling. We need, we need so many different things in infrastructure. We need roads leading up to these data centers. We need power, right, to power these data centers. So all of that, I think, and are the picks and shovels quite literally, where that obviously takes a little bit more off right now. And that's also part of the broadening out that we are seeing in the market, that even more sectors and more companies that are a little bit more unassuming, maybe at the first look, kind of starting to participate in that because they're like also beneficiaries of the immediate build out of data centers itself.
The one that it doesn't necessarily get overlooked, but everybody always talks about the picks and the shovels. I think what we saw recently in earnings is the money center banks. investment banking.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yep.
Right. Yeah, sure. There's a lot of M&A happening. Yep.
And a lot of IPOs tied to AI and all of that. Yep. And a lot of stock issuance and.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think from one of my favorite industries, not just banks in general, but money center banks specifically is one that.
They just reported earnings. I mean, that is like.
And they were great earnings.
It was a little bit ridiculous at some point of how much they grew and how much they benefited from investment banking and from trade activity with all the volatility and stuff. Yep. They were able to bank big on that. But these numbers, like breaking records in quarters, in net income, in trading revenue, that was nearly ridiculous to see like how well they are doing.
Now you'd have to take that with a grain of salt because IB doesn't necessarily, it comes in waves.
Exactly, yeah.
But if you know, AI is here to stay and we have this volatility, I think those are a few areas where people should be investing in. But what I also thought was interesting was Bank of America did a survey. And the survey basically said that 82% of the people that they interviewed or got responses from for the survey said that the going long, meaning buying semiconductors and holding it in your portfolios is the most overcrowded trade. And there's nothing even close.
No.
Like the Magnificent Seven was 7% as a crowded trade. So like that's one thing to think about when we're seeing.
And we're seeing such extremes. Well, that's probably at some
point
going
to. And then the other part that I thought was interesting was another part of the survey was what is the biggest tail risk to the market? Meaning what could derail the market essentially?
Mm-hmm.
And 45% of the responses was an AI bubble, which was more than a second wave of inflation at 26%. Geopolitical conflict was only 8%.
Mm-hmm.
So like when you guys are looking at this, do you agree with the most crowded trade or is there something else out there that might be more crowded? Or maybe it's just not, you don't think it's crowded at all in general.
The semiconductor?
Yeah.
I think it's true. And we see that. And we just saw also SK Hynix, which is a South Korean chip company.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw that Francie over there, obviously. I mean, that's just US. But when we look over there, where Samsung and SK Hynix, both chip companies competing with each other, making the majority, over 50% of the KOSPI, which is the South Korean index. And what happened over there, like the extreme volatility, just because of these two names, can I amplify returns to the upside and the downside, right? For good or for worse. And SK Hynix just went public in the US with a US listing last Friday and raised $26 billion.
That is insane.
This is insane. Like this is the second largest IPO, I think, from an outside. And the largest IPO in history was 2019 Saudi Aramco, which went public in Saudi Arabia and raised $25 billion. That was the largest IPO ever in history. And now we have SpaceX with 75 in June. And then now we have SK Hynix, which is just the US listing, raising more than the largest IPO from 2019.
Yeah, and it's just
the
US listing.
It's not even the
company's public in South Korea.
And raised more than a whole the previous biggest IPO in history. So that is just insane. And we see that in the volatility of these chip stocks also in the US, it's pretty crowded trade. And with all of these levered ETFs, and we talked about that last week and the week before a little bit, which amplifies these swings even more. I would say, I'm with it that it's pretty crowded. Yeah.
Yeah. John, on the second one of AI bubble being the biggest tail risk versus even like geopolitical risk or second wave. Do you agree with that? Or do you think there's potential for other things to pop up that maybe this Iran war can, maybe we've started to see things pick back up and start to escalate again. Mm-hmm. Maybe that escalates. Like what do you think is the biggest risk? Is it truly an AI bubble?
Yeah, I think the thing is that the market, knows how to deal with inflation. They've seen waves of inflation before. They've seen geopolitical conflict in the Middle East, but obviously we've never went through this AI bubble. So that's kind of the new thing that everyone's concerned about. As far as do I agree with it having the most tail risk? I think down there in number three is disorderly rise in bond yields. Most of the issues kind of stem from credit. So if there was something that was going to cause a tail event, I would probably lean towards there over an AI bubble. But those things can be related if the hyperscalers keep raising debt market money, and that can kind of correlate there. So
interesting. Yeah, it's just, I thought the reason I brought both of these up is because when we talk about AI, we talk about it in terms of like, we're in the second, third inning, mm-hmm. but now all of a sudden people are starting to get worried that we're in an AI bubble. So I just think it's interesting if we
hear a lot about the AI bubble since last year and the comparison drawn to the dot-com era, mm-hmm. Which is, I mean, it's a fair, you know, concern. Yeah, I mean, but the only thing is we know that we were for sure in a bubble once it's over, right? We can only determine that in hindsight.
Yeah.
Nobody can know right now, today, if we are in a bubble or not. With certainty. Mm-hmm. And that's the next kind of concerning thing, right? Nobody knows. And you can compare all you want. This has never happened before in that way. It's different than the dot-com era for sure. But you know, you can, again, like history rhymes, but it doesn't repeat, right? And as a matter of fact, we can see it in hindsight.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's pockets within the AI trade that are
bubbly.
That could be bubbly. Obviously investors think semiconductors are probably a little bubbly at mm-hmm. this point. But then the other concern too is if you go back to the .com and a company just changes their name to pets.com, the stock was up 100%. Same concept today is...
Oh, we see that a little bit today too. When a shoe Allbirds, company is going to Allbirds AI and then...
from a shoe company to yeah. AI and all yeah. of a sudden the stock is up like yeah. 300% in a matter of weeks, right? Yeah. That's where you start to get this bubble conversation. Mm-hmm. So I think there are pockets, but I don't necessarily agree that we're in a bubble mm-hmm. right now. I can't see it, but...
Yeah, I think one of the good parts is that it's been rotating. Like last year, it was all the Mag 7, and now the Mag 7 has taken a big break here. So I think...
And the market is still up, so yeah, that kind of is a good way.
The constant yeah. rotation to different areas kind of alleviates some of the pressure from the bubble.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the other thing too is with the overcrowding, with people being concerned about the bubble, it doesn't seem like people are really rotating into some of these underloved areas. So like consumer stocks, consumer discretionary plus consumer staples, the allocation to those two sectors is at its lowest point since March or May of 2006, right? So despite people being concerned about the bubble, despite people being concerned about semis, they aren't necessarily, yes, it might be rotating into financials or industrials or materials or utilities, but they're not rotating into some of these other sectors like healthcare or consumer type stocks. Do you guys think that there's opportunities here in whether it's consumer healthcare, like outside of the just AI trade? Is there?
So I think like with consumer discretionary specifically, I mean, we hear a lot about the K-shaped economy, right? That the upper K end, which is the higher income consumer, is basically carrying all of the work and is keep spending and then is doing fine. And the lower income consumer, the lower end of the K, is struggling with higher gas prices and higher prices mm-hmm. overall. So I think that is kind of a deterrent overall for consumer discretionary. Mm-hmm. But again, like retail spending is still fine. The higher income consumer is fine, right? But I think that is one part, like the fear of now with the oil prices that we had since the war broke out. I mean, now they're, you know, went back down and now we're having a little bit of flare up again. So I think that is obviously the turn from consumer discretionary. and all the discussions about slowing consumer and all of that fears, I think kind of waited on that. So I think there is opportunity. I also think there's opportunity in health. I mean, that sector, we talked about a lot about this, right? Like how long something can be bad is kind of astounding. Yeah. But I think there's great opportunities, but it just hasn't worked.
Yeah.
It's, and I don't even know why exactly. I mean, you have to be careful in healthcare. There's kind of pharmaceuticals, there's med tech, there's insurers, kind of what subsector.
Yeah.
But this, it has, nothing has worked basically.
Well, UNH reported,
yeah, UNH came
this
back
morning and
strong,
beaten, raise, and yeah, stocks up good. Yeah. But John, thoughts?
Yeah, I would agree. I think probably, in my opinion, there's more opportunity in healthcare. I think the kind of the macro side is more favoring that with the aging population. And if you look into the jobs numbers every month, it's always healthcare that's kind of leading the charge and driving any positive job growth that we see in the economy. So I think healthcare has more potential than maybe consumer discretionary in there.
Okay. All right. We'll close it out with some fun stuff. So last match of the World Cup is coming up. So
we have two more.
2 days ago.
Because we have to still figure out the third place.
Well, okay.
But one big game.
Who watches the third place game?
Well, it's England, France, which could be interesting.
Spain beat France 2 days ago. And then yesterday, Argentina was able to overcome UK. And I've been actually cheering since the US was knocked out. My all-time favorite player, bandwagon fan, of course, is Messi. Mm-hmm. So I've been cheering for Argentina. Okay. So I'm excited for that.
But they won in 2022. So
they did
give someone else a chance, Tyler.
No, because this would solidify, no matter what, if I think he's already solidified it, but if he was able to get Argentina a win,
and it's the last
win,
it's the last one for
this
him,
would solidify,
right?
Yeah,
how old is he? Like
39.
40.
Okay. That's the last one.
It
I
would
guess.
Solidify him as like the easily OG. The greatest soccer player of all time. Mm-hmm. Have you guys watched any games besides your Austria game?
That was life. But other than that, not on purpose, as I'm not sitting down and kind of watching it, but then it's on somewhere. I watch it. I think that's some soccer genes inside me that kind of still is drawn to it or interesting because it's the World Cup. Yeah. Other than that, I'm not really interested in it. But yeah, I mean, yesterday's game was very interesting. Mm-hmm. England kind of was leading for the longest time. And then Argentina came back with two more goals. So that was at least, exciting to watch.
Yeah, I've seen some highlights, but I'm not a big soccer fan, so I haven't actually sat down and watched any games. But as for who I'm rooting for in the finals, I don't really have a dog in this fight, but it would be cool to see Messi kind of end his career and really solidify himself. And so I guess I kind of wouldn't mind seeing that, but
it's been tough. To be fair, it's been tough, especially these last couple of rounds, just because the games are played at like noon, 1 o'clock. Mm-hmm. Right. So you can
sit down and watch, you can kind of
yesterday
walk
at work,
by.
Just going to plop down and, but yeah, hopefully, I don't know what, I would imagine the game final is...
I think it's Saturday or Sunday. It's on a weekend. It's this weekend. So you have time to sit down and watch.
I'll have to sit down and watch.
Yeah.
And then last one, when do you leave?
July 31st. Yes. July 30th. Yeah. Something like that. July 31st.
Okay. Yeah. So we'll get you for one more week.
Yep.
And then you're gone for how long?
2.5 weeks. Oof. As in 2 weeks. Yeah.
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 Are you ready? Are you getting excited?
Oh, I'm getting excited.
Where
yes.
are you going?
So I'm going to my home country, to Austria, like once a year. I'm visiting family and friends. And I'm excited, to see everyone and spend time with them, quality time. It's busy because I'm kind of basically traveling from door to door for 2 weeks, but it's good. And I obviously will do a new, a little bit more new research for us on the newest spritz development in Europe. I heard there's something new that I discovered last year, which is Aperol Spritz is out. Sarti Spritz is now in.
Okay.
So I will do a little bit, for the sake of all of us, a little research on that and bring back my findings on the newest drink development from over there.
Well, at least we get you for one more week.
Yes.
But other than that, we'll see you guys next week. Mm-hmm. And then like and subscribe.
Investing involves the risk of loss. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be regarded as personalized investment advice or relied upon for investment decisions. Jeremy Bryant, Tyler Ellegaard, Keith Gangle, Lisa Schreiber, and David Amma are employees of Gradient Investments, LLC, and may maintain positions in the securities discussed in this podcast. All opinions expressed by them and their guests are solely their own opinion and do not reflect the opinion of Gradient Investments, LLC. Please consult your independent investment advisor before making any investment decisions. The information herein is for informational purposes only and should not be used as the sole basis for making an investment decision. Investing involves risk, including the potential loss of principal. For more information, please request a copy of Gradient Investments ADV Part 2A. Gradient Investments LLC is an SEC registered investment advisor.